Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Duvin, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program that comes your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. I archive it at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. Boy, when it starts doing that, I'm really going to be concerned about my longevity into my career here. We are also linking to our guest's website. I'll give that to you in just a little while. And we encourage you to check out all of the information that our guests have to offer. As I say, just about every program, if it resonates with you, please follow up on it. We lay out this giant table with all this smorgasbord, incredible selection of things that you can check out. The whole point is about choices and knowledge of those choices. If you don't know that you can choose that, you can't choose it. So we're trying to put that in front of you, saying, hey, guess what? Here's this too. And not everybody chooses the same thing. And so that's why it's really exciting, because each one of us has a path that we're on, and we have things to share. And when we share those things with others, they learn and they grow. We learn and grow by having information shared with us, experiences. And I will have to say that as of this recording, my wife and I had the experience of being displaced from our home because of a wildfire up in the hills above Santa Barbara. And we were out for 10 days, and we were moving from one motel to another over the course of those 10 days. The last 2 days we spent in a residence home, and I hated to leave because it was so nice, because I knew we didn't have to move again except to go home. And anyway, we did, and it was one of those working staycations. That's kind of how I looked at it. Even though certainly you're concerned about losing all your possessions, they can be replaced. And yes, lots of memories. I've got lots of archives from my years in broadcasting. That's the way it goes. But just trying to put a positive spin on it. Well, a positive spin on this program is to have a guest return to the microphone, in this case Skype, to share with us from his vast knowledge and his search. He is the author of one of his works is The Immediate Happiness. That is the title of his book, Be Happy Now, Using Practical Steps with Immediate Proven Results. Anil Gupta is my guest, and Anil, it's great to have you back on the program to share with us from not only this, but also a new work that you are shortly going to be coming out with. Thank you for joining us.
No, my pleasure, Richard. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
You know, it's, just talking about immediate happiness, we're always looking for instant gratification, and that's, I don't know if do we put your concepts from immediate happiness into that context that, oh, we can get instant gratification, instant happiness. Of course, we do have to read the book, so that takes a little time. But once that's done, it works that fast.
See, it's not about gratification. It's about who you're being, how you show up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I remember going through a very difficult period in my life, and I wanted to get out of the funk that I was in. And I just didn't know a way how. So what I've been able to develop are tools and methodologies that people can use to get out of a situation that will give them that immediate result. So immediate results, immediate happiness is very powerful, because it's based on practicalities. People think that knowledge is power, but it's not. Knowledge is only power if you can implement.
That's quite true, quite profound in that respect. Doesn't do you any good if it isn't implemented. You're absolutely right. And again, that's why when we talk about choices, I use the analogy of walking along a roadway, and you've done it your entire life, but the fog has always been low. So they tell you, as you walk and you'll get to your destination, just follow the white line on the shoulder of the roadway and you'll be just fine. And you are. Everything is good. All of a sudden, one day, something really strange happens. The fog lifts. And suddenly you notice there's a fork in the road that you didn't even know was there. So now you have a choice. You can continue following the white line on the shoulder, or you can investigate this fork, this other path. And that's what we offer here. And so the path doesn't do any good unless you go down it and investigate it. And I think that And that's really important. And that was probably the wrong word to use, gratification, in the context of what we're talking about, because I do understand what you're referring to. So how many different steps, if you will, what is the general process? We want people to maybe go out and pick up the book as well. But what are the general what's the general process of immediate happiness?
Well, really, the number one concept and methodology is awareness. Awareness gives you clarity. Clarity gives you focus. Focus gives you action. Action gives you results. Results gives you momentum. And that's when you get to the place of bliss, joy, fulfillment. So everything that we do is based on awareness. Awareness is the master discipline. You cannot be in love. You cannot be joyous. You cannot be successful without awareness. So that's basically what we need to work on. And from the awareness, we work on different parts of our life.
Hmm. So when I guess one of the most important questions maybe to ask you is how you came up with this. What was the impetus, the catalyst for this wonderful concept?
Well, it stemmed from deep adversity. I was on the verge of suicide in November 2008, in the midst of all the turmoil. I wouldn't eat with a knife. I wouldn't walk up a flight of stairs. I wouldn't walk in a busy street just in case I had 10 seconds of madness. That's all it takes, 10 seconds. And I just was thinking of the unthinkable. And even then, I felt such a failure. And I thought, Anil, if you try to commit suicide right now, you'd even mess that up.
Oh, wow.
And I laughed at myself. And I thought, yeah. And in that moment, when I laughed at myself, I felt differently because the focus was taken off me and it was shifted somewhere else. So the secret is, and this is the one thing that helped me a lot, in the moment I gave authentically, there was no pain, there is no suffering. And that felt good and it gave me a release. So I started thinking, oh, what else can I do? What else can I do?
Hmm. And it just continues to grow to this day. Tell us about the latest work that you have that you're working on.
Really, I've developed a happiness score that people can take a test and they get a happiness score, and from that score they can work out areas of their life that they need to work on, because a lot of people are missing clarity. And I've also developed a happiness formula, which is happiness equals G cubed. And if I could share the three G's, I would love to for the audience to be able to take action on this.
How important, because you actually have a section in your book, Immediate Happiness, quotes to ponder. And for example, I've come across this one that you've written: working on you will produce the best results you will ever get. You will become fulfilled. How important are these kinds of things as opposed to someone who says, look, you know, platitudes and fancy quotes and affirmations, they're really not helpful to be happy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it stems again from the awareness, because the common denominator in wherever you go is you.
Mm-hmm.
So if say, for example, you have a car accident, you were there, you were part of that cause. Somebody may have hit you, but you were part of it because you took the car, you went in the car, you drove that road at a particular time, in a particular way, in a particular direction, blah, blah, blah. So we have to realize we're causing the matter. Whatever happens to us is because of actions or inactions that we've taken or not taken. So if you work on you, everything starts to change because you are the common denominator. That can never be separated. So it's so fundamental that it's so powerful, and it has the immediate results.
When we are searching, trying to find, shall we say, our place in the family, in the workplace, in our society, in the human race, and we're asking questions, trying to get answers that will help us. How important are those questions?
The questions are very powerful, and the quality of your life is really dependent on the type and quality of the questions that you ask. But it all, again, stems from awareness. So during the day, and this is a great exercise I give my coaching clients, I ask them, write down your emotions. And we have hundreds of emotions during the day. And then write down your emotions for an hour, and then see what the common emotion is. Is it the fact that I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I don't have enough money, I'm a failure, I'm tired? And from there, you can decide, do I want to live like this, or do I not want to live like this? What can I change? So really, again, you're the common denominator. Your thoughts go with you. You create your thoughts one way or the other. The more time you spend on one thought, the more likelihood that you're going to stay in that world. So again, it's very powerful for you to be able to reassess your life. A small shift over a week, a month, a year will make a big shift.
You know, there's an interesting attribute that you do talk about having to do with the quality of your life is determined by the quality of the forgiveness that you are able to give, both for others and for yourself. And I've kind of, it's one of those things where, for me anyway, I'm the type of person, I've always been this way, in spite of some of the things that I've been through, that I've always given people the benefit of the doubt. Whereas a lot of people around me are cynical to the point where, well, yeah, but are you aware of what they just did? And I say, I know what they just did. But why does that mean I have to write them off as an acquaintance or even a friend? I mean, certainly there are certain lines that, you know, we don't want to cross in that regard. It's like there comes a point where if they're being abusive to you, then you have to draw the line. But it's as if people have set up these walls. And I guess one of the best examples that I was shared with, I was having problems here in Santa Barbara and driving the freeways and everything. And I was getting upset with people, you know, the typical building up of the frustrations of people doing stupid stuff. Someone finally said to me, and this was so profound, they said, you have to understand, Richard, that person did not get up this morning and say, let's get Richard. We're going to pick on him today. Okay. They don't do it consciously, which is both good and bad. But it took the personal aspect out of it. And that we all make, heck, I got a speeding ticket. I was, you know, it happens. And so that was a place where I was able to reside and have been able to maintain saying, okay, I see what they just did. And they aren't picking on me. This isn't personal. They're just not aware of what they're doing. Kind of going back to your whole aspect of awareness. They're not aware of what they're doing. And I can't blame them. I need to be aware of what I'm doing and use my intuition to figure, you know, I get a feeling this person's going to do this. I need to back off a little bit more, that kind of thing. And I got to tell you, that works really well. But in terms of forgiveness, when someone has wronged us, is forgiveness more a change of perspective of that incident and or that person? Or is it more than that? Is it different than that?
Well, the secret is not to give them power over your life. And okay. That's what your friends are doing. They're giving these people power over their lives, whereas you're willing to let it go and not have power over your life so that you can focus on the things that are important to you. And that releases your ability to focus and help more people. It allows you to lead a richer, fuller, happier life, and a healthier one too, because having resentment is incredibly unhealthy.
Mm.
So, part of that is the meaning you make it. If someone, and I'll give you an example, a friend of mine is going through a divorce, mm-hmm. and she texted me yesterday. She said, oh, he's doing this deliberately. He's hurting me. He's enjoying it. And I said to her, honey, he's not doing this deliberately. He made a choice and he's living with that choice. He's not trying to deliberately hurt you he's not enjoying the process, but that's the way she's perceiving it. And by her perceiving it that way, she's feeling even more pain.
Mm.
And it's costing her so much more anxiety and her health.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it differently. She's seeing it differently. But it's going to be a lot more painful for her. And that any time he does anything in the future, she's going to say, there he goes again. Because as human beings, we love to be right.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. I mean, I've been through my own divorce, and I remember the quote from a marriage and seminar speaker that I think I still have the tapes. I'm not sure if I've lost them over the years, but nonetheless, he used to talk about this in regards to his counseling of couples, especially if they were going through divorce. And he asked the question of the audience, you know, who do you think suffers more, if you will, emotionally during a divorce, the man or the woman? And of course, most people figured the woman. And he gave this one example, and he says, actually, it's the man. He's the one who suffers because he's the one who is not allowed to be emotional. He's not allowed to release that. He's got to be strong, and he's got to be tough, and he's got to be stalwart, if you will. Whereas the woman, she's, you know, it's okay if she breaks down and cries, but not the guy. It hurt. I didn't want it to happen, and I know my ex-wife didn't want it to happen either, but it did. Those were the choices we made, and I've since communicated with her. And you know, I don't know about you, Anil, but for someone else who has gone through divorce, you have to ask yourself: did you really ever stop caring about them? And I have to say, I didn't. I haven't. You know, I mean, my gosh, whatever time, in my case, it was 15 years, however much time you spent with that person, my gosh, you spent that time with them. How can you just write that off? That's part of your life now. And that person,
you know,
too.
You know what people do? They focus on the things that have not been working. They forget about the beautiful moments, how they met, how much joy that the other person brought them, what they would do for that other person early on. They forget all that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really unfortunate. So let me ask you about your background philosophically. Where do you hail from in that respect, from a spiritual or philosophic perspective?
Really, I stem just from practicality, because in the moment that I wanted to, hurt myself, I knew what to do, but I couldn't implement. So I'm really about practicality. I want people to be able to have results quickly, because once you get results, you get hope, and hope is so wonderful.
Hope. A lot of people are looking for hope. I bring this up in some of our interviews. We don't really go into current events, and that's not necessarily the direction I'm going, but we have these various things that happen over time. They could be natural disasters. They could be man-made disasters. They could be conflicts within a particular institution. You know, we went through a very tumultuous political sequence in 2015-16, and even to this day, and people are trying to make sense of it. And I have to say that I was sucked into the whole thing emotionally and so forth for 6 months, from September 2016. Finally got myself out of it by being able to acknowledge and actually say, thank you for teaching me that this is not the way I want to be. And giving that person, if you will, acknowledgement, even though that person is never going to hear it, I just kind of put that out there. You are my teacher. As hard as that is to say, like to the bullies that I grew up with in school, they were my teachers then, but I didn't notice it. I didn't see it. And now I can see that and say, yes, you are my teacher, and I'm going to learn really, really well. I'm going to get an A in this course, you know, of learning how not to behave. And it's not that I've ever behaved that way, but I definitely want to stay away from that. I want to stay away from people who are like that, because I don't want that kind of energy, that kind of influence in my life. What about that aspect of being, I'm going to use the word discerning as opposed to discriminating, about the people that you surround yourself with in your life?
You know, who you spend time with is who you become. I was coaching a client yesterday, and he was talking about a time that he got arrested for having personal drugs in the house. And he was very upset. He was still, this was maybe 5-10 years ago, he was still beating himself up for doing that. And I said to him, hey man, that day, that police officer saved your life. He said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, you were taking drugs and you weren't in good company. What do you think could have happened if you weren't busted? Then he stopped and realized, oh my God, I'd be a different person. I wouldn't be as caring, as giving. He wouldn't be focused on nutrition. He wouldn't be focused on helping a million people. And that's what he was focused on. So in life, it's not what happens, it's who you become. You can have two sets of twins, exactly the same circumstance. One could become a law enforcement officer and the other one could become a drug dealer. But ultimately, it's who did they decide they wanted to become? Do you want to be a victim or do you want to be a winner?
Mm.
So ask yourself, in this moment right now, who do I want to become? What am I willing to let go of? And what am I really here for? What's my gift? By asking these types of questions, you can focus on what you want rather than what you don't want. So let me give you an example. Mother Teresa was asked to march against war. She absolutely refused. She said, no, I would never do that. And everyone was confused. And then they said, Mother Teresa, why would you not do that? She said, look, I will march for peace, but I will not march against war. So she knew where she wanted to go, not where she wanted to go away from. And they're two different things.
Hmm. And she wasn't playing semantical games.
No.
And I understand what she was saying. And that makes, in other words, if it was a peace march, okay, then she probably would have participated.
Absolutely. Because she knew what she wanted.
Are you familiar with, I'm sure you're familiar with Nelson Mandela's story. And the thing that has always been so profound for me was his telling of the decision he made early on in prison, where he could have chosen to go one of two different directions, and he could have continued down that path of aggression and violence and all of this kind of stuff, but he chose to go the other way. Even spending 25 years in prison, he chose to go that other way. And look what happened. I mean, look what an incredible life he lived. He became the president of South Africa, acknowledged by millions around the world. And it's just incredible. And so I've often said this. It doesn't matter where you are and what your circumstances are. You always have choices.
Yeah, you always have a choice. And here's one sentence that will impact every member of your audience. And this is something so beautiful that Steve Martin said this. So here it is. He said this: be so great that you cannot be ignored.
Oh, wow. That was Steve Martin, the comedian?
Yeah, I know. It's,
the
it's
wild and crazy guy?
There you go.
But hey, we remember him.
That you cannot be ignored. And yeah, perhaps he did that in his acting career.
And then
I added a little bit at the end. Be so great that you cannot be ignored. And if you are ignored, it does not matter.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because how you're showing up in life will be totally different. And you don't need that recognition. You don't need that kudos.
Oh, wow. Well, I have to say that he was a big influence on my life as I was growing up in the 70s. I have a lot of his comedy albums still in my possession. I still remember a lot of the lines because I listened to them over and over again. And then, of course, started watching his films as he began to go into acting. And it's funny, I have to say that this whole thing with being evacuated brought back to mind that scene in the movie The Jerk where he's leaving Bernadette Peters, and so he's gathering things along the way as he walks out the house with his pants around his ankles. I need this, and I need this, and this ashtray, and that's all I need. I don't need anything else except this corkscrew driver. I need this and this and this and the ashtray and the corkscrew driver, and I don't need anything else, but I need this book. And I mean, and he went on and on and on. And we were kind of like that as we were trying to leave the house. You know, okay, well, what else is it that not only do we want to make sure we take with us just in case, but also that we'll fit in the car. I mean, we only had so much room, you know. It wasn't like we could unload the, pack up the entire house. And in a way, that is the way in which we sort of go through life, or can, when it comes to all of these different ideas and concepts that I talked about at the beginning of the program, in terms of our smorgasbord that we lay out. You know, every time we get to this, on this program, the table is set out, the spread is laid out, and you can take or leave whatever you want. Take as many as you want, because there's it's an infinite supply. And incorporate it or don't incorporate it. I love the word from the one word from the book Stranger in a Strange Land that talks about grokking, to grok something, to assimilate it into every cell, to every atom of your being, and be that you take in. And that's kind of what we're talking about here, that it doesn't, and it never stops. We're always searching. We're always investigating. We're wanting answers to questions, because when questions are answered, new questions come up from those answers. And to me, that is, I mean, I sit in conversation with people like I do with you and others, but like around a table, we're sitting having a nice drinks and what have you, and having an incredible conversation. And I have actually been able to be the observer, listening to how the conversation moves from what we never get stuck. It moves from one subject to the next. Even if we're talking on a metaphysical or spiritual or philosophical conversation, it just keeps moving. And I love that. And to me, that's part of what our life is about. We don't want to get stuck, per se, for too long in one spot, because then we don't get to move to the next one and get a different perspective.
Yeah. You know, we are causing the matter. We can write our own script. We can write our own play. We can write our own drama. Mm. And it's our choice. Every minute you have a choice. You can react or respond. You can show up as great or show up not as great. You can be comfortable or you can be uncomfortable. And if you decide to be uncomfortable, that's when the biggest change happens, because then you will make a choice.
You know, here's a this is one that, growing up, born and raised a Catholic, this one is interesting. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional.
Correct. Absolutely beautiful. That's so powerful.
Yeah. Tell me the difference between the two, because it seems to me if I'm in pain, I must be suffering.
No. Pain is temporary. Suffering is eternal. Mm. So let me give you an example.
Please.
If you bang your knee, you're in pain, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You're not really suffering.
Right.
But if you bang your knee and you go to the doctor, he says, there's nothing you can do. You go to another doctor, there's nothing you can do. You go to 20, 30 doctors, there's nothing you can do. You're going to have that pain for the rest of your life. You're going to be suffering. If you have a relationship and you're upset with the other person and you don't think there's ever going to be a solution, that's suffering. But if you know there's going to be a solution, then it's painful.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I really do. And I hope others are as well. And I have found, too, that it's really interesting how I have been raised. And I was raised very well from my perspective, and my parents, they did a great job, especially considering that they had to divide their attentions six ways, you know. But I find that as I move through life, there are certain things that cause others pain. It's like, I don't get it. Why are you in pain? You know. Now, if we are having emotional distress, is that under the category of pain or suffering?
Well, it depends on what type of emotional stress it is and how long you're willing to keep holding on to it, and whether you think it's temporary or long-term. You know, there's a few factors.
Okay.
So if you think that that suffering is never, that emotional upset is never going to disappear, then you're going to suffer. And you don't know you're suffering, but you're suffering. But if you know that, you know, after the divorce, after this situation, everything will be fine, that's painful. But it's something that you know that you'll overcome. Breaking a leg is painful, but you know that you're going to make a recovery once you've been to the doctors and they've given you the news. You know that you're going to heal yourself, so you're not going to suffer. You're going to be in pain.
Right, right. Interesting. When we get back, can we talk about your new work and what it is that you're bringing to the table, as it were?
Absolutely, would love to.
Terrific. I'm Richard Dugan with Anil Gupta. By the way, the website, immediatehappiness.com. We'll make sure that we have that link on our website to your website so others can go there and they can learn more about what it is that you're doing. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we would like for you to stay right where you are because there's so much more great stuff coming your way.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan here with Anil Gupta. And the website is immediatehappiness.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. We'll make sure that we have that link on our website to your website so others can go there and they can learn more about what it is that you're doing. And speaking of what it is that you're doing, tell us about your latest work and endeavor.
Well, my next book is going to be called The Happiness Equation, Happiness Formula. Not sure which one I'm going to choose yet, which is H equals G cubed. But it really goes into a greater depth of how human beings work, why we do what we do, why we get the results that we get, why we sabotage our success, our relationships, our lives. And we've never been taught how we function. And this book will be a deeper manual. And as I've accumulated more and more knowledge, I'm going to be adding it to the new book.
When you look around at people, you experience people. Are you, through your experience, able to discern, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10 or whatever the scale might be, to 100, how happy they are? Because I know you've heard of the happiness index. I think it was Bhutan that actually started using that, as opposed to the gross national product or something of this nature. To determine just how their citizens were doing. And so they used this happiness index. Can you tell just through conversation where people are on that kind of a scale?
Well, I don't scale them. I know that there's something going on, and it really depends on how deep and how they're reacting to it. But I can pick things up straight away because everything that we do is vibrational. And so when someone walks into a room, you can feel their energy, and that's all due to vibrational. So as we become clearer, as we become more giving, as we become more beautiful souls, our vibrational energy changes. And when our vibrational energy changes, people can feel it. Mm. And it's so powerful.
So now we're going into the realms of, am I correct, sort of quantum physics in this regard?
Well, it is, but it's very basic.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example. If someone comes into your house with a gun and holds a gun to your head, your vibrational energy, I promise you, will change.
Mm-hmm.
Once he leaves, your vibrational energy changes. It's that simple. So no need to get into the technicalities, mm-hmm. but how you show up changes. How you vibrate changes according to who you're being, how you're being, how you show up, how great you're being, what your purpose and mission is, whether you're leading it or not leading it. So if you're happy, you suddenly feel differently. And when you feel differently, your vibrational energy has changed.
Mm.
Very simple. But,
yeah.
You know,
well,
you
I
don't need to know.
Yeah. I can give you a prime example, a real example on my part. when I was getting ready to leave on Saturday, July 8th for work to go down to produce a baseball game at the radio station, my wife and I saw this giant, enormous plume of smoke out to the west of our residence. And I'm just thinking, oh, okay, that's not clouds. I know the difference. And I'm thinking, what's happening? So I started to do some searching, and of course I found some information, and I thought, okay, maybe they'll get this thing under control. I'm going to wait another hour. I've got plenty of time. So I'll wait another hour at least. And it didn't get much better. And then I started hearing that it was really taken off. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go down, I'll do the game, and I'll be back, da-da-da-da-da-da. I got down to the turnoff to get onto the highway, and I stopped. I pulled to the side of the road. I tried to make a couple of calls, and there was something inside of me that says, don't go. Go ahead and go back. The guy that's running, it was a doubleheader, so I had somebody doing the first game, and he can do the second game. It's going to push he's going to stretch him a little bit, but he can do it. I went back. And my wife was just absolutely delighted because she said, I didn't want you to leave in the first place. Well, I wish she had said that, but nonetheless. But I have to tell you that there we were sitting in the house waiting, trying to get more information. And then around, I think it was around 6:30, the authorities rolled up to our house, blared their siren two or three times to get our attention. We went out. They said, you are under an evacuation order. You have 10 minutes to leave. And, of course, we packed all the animals up that we could in the car, all of our things that we were getting ready to do, because we were kind of preparing at this point, thinking, hey, if it happens, we want to be ready. If it doesn't, we can unpack. And we left. And when we were finally in the hotel room, I have to say that my energy shifted. Was I still concerned? Was I still stressing? Yes. But I was stressing less and for different reasons. And I put it this way, if we had stayed, which in retrospect would have been okay because the fire never reached our home, if we had stayed, I would have been stressing day and night as long as we were there, fearing that that fire was going to come across the road and then onto the property and so forth. Whereas now I'm in the hotel room and I'm just concerned about, okay, well, we've got enough money to get through for a few days, you know, what have you. We got a couple of dogs with us that, you know, we have to keep an eye on and feed and so forth. Got to feed us. And I was concerned with just basic moment-to-moment, day-to-day living. I wasn't stressing about our safety anymore. And that was a huge relief and release for me. But that was definitely an energy shift that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And another thing happened is that you removed a lot of attachments to things.
Yeah. I actually got to the point where I said, you know what? It doesn't matter if this thing goes up in smoke, the house goes up. First of all, of course, we have insurance. That's what it's there for. But it's all just stuff. And if we're safe, hey, we're good.
That's good.
And we've got enough friends and so forth around that, hey, you know, we'll find another place and we'll hold up temporarily here or there, wherever it is. It'll be okay. It'll be good. And this is just part of the adventure. And I started looking at it as I think I phrased it at the beginning of the program, a working stay vacation, you know, because we were staying in motels for the first 8 days. And moving from we went to three different motels over the course of 8 days. Would have been nice to have stayed in one, but my wife says, you know, that if we'd done that, we'd have gotten a little too comfortable. But it was an experience. I says, when are we going to get a chance to try some of these places? You know, we can now write reviews. And we're grateful to the places that supported us, including the people that took us in at the end. But I think that that's another aspect I want to ask you about in terms of our intuition. What kind of a role in this scenario does intuition play?
Really, 80% of our immune system is in the gut. And I firmly believe intuition is very powerful. I don't have any scientific basis behind it, but, you know, I read about gut intuition, about, you know, what we feel is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And when you have something like that, go with it, because there's so many factors involved with it. We have no idea, but it's a mechanism for you, for your protection and for your safety and for your joy, that we should do that.
I could not agree with you more. I think that, that when we begin that process, it's and I actually went through a personal growth program many years ago, and one of the exercises was to write down on this large white rectangular piece of paper a profound a statement. And mine was, and I still have it too, that I will listen to, and this was in script or cursive, and then in all caps, and follow, and then back to script again or cursive, the promptings of my inner voice, or as I like to refer to, my friend. And I joke with people, I say, you know, that if you're going to listen to your inner voice or intuition, but not follow it, why are you listening? And I say it a little facetiously. What's the point? You need to follow the guidance that you're being given. But let me ask you a question on that. How can I be sure that that's my intuition? What question or questions do I need to pose mentally to that impression, if you will, before I can trust it?
Ask yourself one question. What does my heart tell me to do? Not your head. What does my heart tell me to do?
Mm. Mm.
My head tells me to run, but my heart tells me to stay and help. My heart tells me I should leave. My heart tells me I should stay.
And in my case with my wife on the 8th of July, it was stay.
Yeah.
You know, now I start looking back on this thinking, you know, this gentleman and I that we're going to work that double header, we talked about which game we wanted to do, and I was more preferable to the evening game. And I'm thinking, gee, I could have worked the day game and still gotten home in time to be there, to be protective and so forth. And then, of course, assist in evacuation because it worked out. Here's another one of your quotes. And again, I love going through these. These are great. And it's not necessarily one of yours, but it's one that you've put into your book, Immediate Happiness. And this is actually from the Buddha. An idea that is developed and put into action is more important than an idea that exists only as an idea. And that kind of goes along the lines of this whole issue of intuition. You know, let's say we're wanting to do something. I'd like to go to this place and experience and have this experience. All right. And that's just kind of putting that out there. And so then in your mind, you start putting all of that together. And hopefully that thought, because from thought comes action or material processing, creation, if you will. But if we don't allow that to manifest in reality, then it just stays an idea and nothing happens.
Yeah, and there's no action, there's no momentum, there's no joy.
It's said that we have, I forget what the statistic was, but it was something along the lines of 30 or 40 million dollar ideas every day. And of course, if that were the case and we were to follow up on even one of those, we'd all be millionaires. But we don't follow up on them because we're not all millionaires.
Well, you know, there's a process that if you did do some implementation, that you would have to step up, you would have to dedicate some time to it. There's a risk of failure. What happens if it didn't work? There's a lot of doubt. You know, as human beings, we love to be comfortable about being comfortable. And what we need to become is uncomfortable about being comfortable and become comfortable about being uncomfortable. That's when you get the biggest growth. When you're comfortable, you get the least growth. When you're uncomfortable, that's when you get the biggest growth.
Yeah, that's interesting because I remember as I would go through my career, when things began to become comfortable, okay, I noticed a pattern that if there was a lot of activity, a lot of action, and a lot of movement, it wasn't that I was uncomfortable, but it was like I didn't really have time to be comfortable, right? So as soon as the dust settled and everything calmed down and it got comfortable, I knew that there was something coming. There was something coming. And I've always kept that in the forefront, realizing that in one sense, I don't want to get too comfortable. For example, people ask me when I'm going to retire. I'm age 57, and I've got a long way to go. But I joke with them and say the only retiring that I'm going to do is on my car. If it needs them, I'll put new tires on it. But they will have to peel my cold, dead carcass off of the console and so forth. Now, still continuing on this aspect of the idea. Now, here's another twist on this idea. It's a different aspect that I'd like to have you elaborate on. This is from John F. Kennedy. A man may die, nations may rise and fall, but an idea lives on. So let's talk about the idea, but from this perspective.
Yeah, it's very powerful. You know, going back to the retirement, to me, it's like they're asking you, when are you going to die? Because they think that when you retire, you start living. They don't get it. You're already living now. There is nothing to retire because you're just being you. Yeah. Whereas a lot of people are working, not because they want to, because they have to. They're not doing what they love. So that there is a retirement for them, retirement from the drudgery. But for you and me, there is no retirement. It's impossible because we can't stop being who we're being.
It is kind of hard. It's kind of hard.
It's not hard. It's just impossible. We cannot stop who we're being because it's in our DNA. It's in our nature. Yeah. And it's who we have been being. And it's second nature to us. And the beautiful thing is, Richard, that it's effortless.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, I was watching a video the other day, and it was an episode of this program, but it was called Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. Now, my co-host, Will Lynn, and I produced and aired a 12-part series back in 2014. But in 2015, I went down to Los Angeles to the studios where he works, and we videoed an episode. And I was watching that episode, and this kind of goes to what you're talking about. I was watching that episode, and every time the camera was on me, and this is not a narcissistic assessment, it's just an observation on my part. I was watching as I spoke and as I gestured and was looking at both Will and our guest. I thought, I like the way that this guy is expressing himself. I mean, this was me, but it was like, I was comfortable with it. You know, it wasn't like, oh my God, look how great I look. No, it wasn't that. It was, I look so comfortable doing what I'm doing. And so this leads into the next quote I want, and this is yours. My father said something similar to this, okay? Choose a job you love. You will never have to work a day in your life. Now, my father's addendum to that would be, don't get stuck like I did, and that's his quote. And then you, Anil, go along to say, it is always the right time to do the right thing, to which I will then add my addendum, Anil, and that is that I have felt that I've always been in the right place at the right time when it came to my career. So finding a job that isn't, that's tough for some folks. And in 2008 and 2009, when thousands of people lost their jobs, the first thought I went through that went through my mind was, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs.
Yeah, very true.
But it opened up a door or window for them.
It was a gift.
Yeah. I wonder how many of them saw that way.
Yeah. Adversity is your friend. Adversity is your gift. Because in that moment, you get an awareness that you've never experienced before.
Now, this goes back to pain and suffering. The initial loss might be painful, but you don't have to suffer. You then turn that around and say, okay, I lost my job. Okay, what am I going to do now? And you don't get into the suffering. You get into the come up with the idea, and then take action.
Well, I tell you, when that happened to me, my wife, she asked me an even more beautiful question. She said to me, "What do you love to do?"
And what was your answer?
And I said, "I love to help people." Then she said, "Go help people." I said, "What about the money?" She said, "Honey, I've never asked you for money. Just go do what you love to do. Everything will be well." Mm-hmm. And that is the most sage advice she's ever given me.
And you actually dedicated the book Immediate Happiness to her.
Absolutely. I released the book on her birthday. I would not be where I am today without her. I owe her an immense gratitude. Mm.
I would have to say the same about my present wife as well. I mean, my ex-wife, again, everybody along the way. And I think you made the comment early on that we don't get where we are by ourselves either, that we owe so many. Such a debt of gratitude, as it were.
Absolutely. You know, I'm so grateful to the people who bullied me as a kid, because I made a decision then that I would be smarter than them, I'd be even more successful than them, that I would step up. And if I hadn't been bullied, I don't know what would have happened, where I would have gone.
Mm. And then I love this one last quote I'm going to share here. "Do not pray for easy lives. Pray to be strong men," from John F. Kennedy. What role, and I'm actually playing off of one word in particular in that quote, what role or construct, if you will, of does prayer play in all of this?
Well, what is prayer?
Good question.
It's a request for clarity.
But who are we praying to, from your perspective?
It's really just we're seeking clarity. So it's just an open-ended question that we just put out to the universe.
And maybe the answer comes back through, say, our intuition?
Well, an answer always comes back because you asked a question.
Mm.
Whenever you ask a question, your brain will always answer. It has to. That's its job. You may not like the answer, but then you can ask another question. So let me ask a question. Say, what do I need to do next? Mm-hmm. You need to step up. How do I step up? You need to focus on areas of your life that you love to do. What's the area of my life that I love to do most? Yeah. And then it just takes you down pathways you've never been before. And then from that, you can say, you know what? I kind of like that idea. Well, I didn't like that one, but I like this one and that one too. If we put those two together, then you start thinking. And this is what happens, because as the first thing that we do when we go to school, what did they tell you to do? Sit down, be quiet, don't talk until you're asked to talk. And all of a sudden, all of our intuition is being taken away from us. All of our self-expression is taken away from us. All of our daydreaming skills are taken away from us. And we become different beings suddenly. And it's so painful.
Mm. I want to thank you for not only what you've contributed to us, contributed to the table that we've laid out for this program today, and the work that you're doing, the books that are forthcoming, I'm sure. I can't express enough not only my appreciation but the necessity. I think of James Redfield from Celestine Prophecy and his sort of description of how important it is that we share the messages that we have with others.
It's very powerful. And, you know, what we have to do, we have to remove ourselves from ourselves. And in the moment that you remove you from the equation, you can focus on your gift, your ability to give, your ability to share your gift. And when you take away you from the equation, that's when greatness arises.
Well, I would say that, greatness, I think it can be achieved over and over again. It's not something that is achieved just once. And if we just go out and do that which we are called to do, it can truly make all the difference in the world in terms of making this a better place for everyone. And I thank you for your contribution at this particular point and look forward to more down the road. We're going to have you back hopefully many times in the future to continue this kind of conversation.
I would love that. And I'm very grateful that you would have the kindness to invite me to your show. Thank you so much.
Before I let you go, I want to extend this invitation that if you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, I would love to have you in studio to do just that, continue this conversation.
You know, I have a very good friend who lives in the area, so maybe I can do that one day, very soon, maybe.
That would
love to do that.
That would be terrific. And then, of course, secondly, let me let our listeners know that ImmediateHappiness.com is the website, ImmediateHappiness.com. Anil Gupta is my guest. And I have three final questions for you that I may or may not have asked you the last time you were on the program. But I'm going to ask you now, and you may have addressed it to some degree during the interview, but I'm going to ask these direct questions. And again, I thank you. The first question is, who is Anil Gupta?
I am an unstoppable warrior that is on this planet to move, touch, and inspire anyone who comes in his way.
Mm. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to inspire 1 billion, that's 1,000 million people, by December 31st, 2020.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to share my gift. I have a gift that can remove any personal obstacle that stops you from living a fulfilled life, whether it's forgiveness, letting go, some relationship issues, whatever it is, I can help you remove that, normally in one, maybe two sessions, so that you can become free, so that you can become free to serve your mission and your gift, and that you can inspire even more people.
And as many people know, part of this program is that the questions that I ask come from the universe. I'm just along for the ride. I'm being prompted to ask or open up this particular element to have you in these final moments of our program and take as long as you would like to share with us anything that you would like that either A, we haven't covered, or that you feel impressed to share with our listeners before we wrap things up.
Really, I'd like to share the happiness formula, which is H equals G cubed. The first G is you have to give. Give your time, your energy, your love, your commitment, your joy, your gift, your money, without wanting anything in return. In the moment you give, there is no pain, there is no suffering. The second G is be grateful. Be grateful for what you have and do not focus on what you don't have. And the third G is you have to grow emotionally, physically, spiritually, and mentally. Now, if you use this formula at any given time, one of those three G's is always below the rest. So if you always focus on the lowest G and build that up, everything rises. So remember, happiness equals G cubed. Give, grow, gratitude. And if you want to find out how happy you are, go to myhappinessscore.com. You'll get a detailed breakdown of areas of your life that you need to work on. If you work on those areas, I promise you, your life will change.
Anil Gupta, again, I thank you so much for your time and sharing with us from your heart about this whole aspect of immediate happiness and making this a better world for everyone. And no one is being excluded. No one has to be excluded. We don't want anybody to be excluded because everybody has a part, a role to play. And we encourage you to be a part of that because it really comes down to this, Anil. I don't want to survive anymore. I want to thrive.
You know, I speak to many people who've overcome cancer, and they say, I'm a cancer survivor. I said, no, you're not. You're a cancer thriver. Mm. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Well, let's go out and thrive and make this world a wonderful place. And we'll do that again very soon. Hopefully, you'll be sharing with us here in studio. If not, we'll do it again on Skype. That works out just fine for us. And again, thank you for sharing with us. And ImmediateHappiness.com is the website, and we'll be linked to you. And namaste to you today.
Namaste. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you so much.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to make your dreams come true. And until next time, Love Talal.